And hopefully those bottles are bisphenol A free.
Yes.
Yes. Our next presenter will be Miss Heather Batson, please.
Good morning. I'm Heather Batson, and I'll be presenting on my and my colleague's work on the intervention dose effects on outcomes of a groupal HIV prevention intervention for adjudicated adolescents. My co-authors are Jennifer Lauby, Archana Bodas-Lapalo, Mary Millamount, and Akhil Pierre, and we all work at Public Health Management Corporation, which is based in Philadelphia, and it's a large public health nonprofit organization. So none of us have any personal financial relationships to disclose. So now on to the presentation. I have a lot of slides, so I'm really going to blow through them pretty quickly. So first is some information about HIV among youth and young adults. The latest CDC incident estimates, which were just released in August, indicate that 14,000 new HIV cases in youth and young adults in 2006. That's one about every 20 minutes. About half of these were in African American youth, and most were contracted through sexual behavior. Adolescents in the juvenile justice system are often more likely than their peers to engage in sexual behaviors that increase their HIV risk. So despite this, only one HIV prevention intervention has been investigated in this population and been demonstrated effective. So the Preventing AIDS Through Live Movement and Sound, or PALMS project, started as a grassroots response to the HIV epidemic in Philadelphia. It's since evolved to become an evidence and theory-based intervention. So first, I'm going to describe this intervention. Second, I'll explain the evaluation methods and the major outcomes from the primary evaluation, which compared an intervention group and the control group. Then I'm going to discuss the dose effects within the intervention group. So the PALMS intervention is a three-session, theater-based, group-level intervention, and it was delivered in high-risk settings like juvenile justice centers and drug treatment locations. The target population is mostly male, mostly African-American youth aged 12 to 18. So what's innovative about PALMS is the theater-based strategies that it uses to engage the youth. They make everything seem really realistic and allow the use of some pop culture elements that allow the youth to really engage with the material. They also allow the peer actors to model appropriate communication about sex and relationships, condom negotiation, and other behaviors. Participants also get a chance to practice solving problems and skills before they have to apply them in real life. It's also really flexible and can be adapted to different types of settings beyond just the juvenile justice and drug treatment settings that I mentioned. So let's talk a little bit more about the play, which is the linchpin of the whole intervention. Each play, and there are a few options that the group uses, is written with the skeleton of a plot. And it touches on skills around communication and topic areas that the intervention is designed to address. But the exact dialogue and characterization is improvised. This makes the acting and the connections between the actors really fresh and intense. So the topics include resisting sexual coercion, implementing low-risk sex practices with established partners, and other topics. In the play, a central dyad will have some type of conflict around sex, and we'll see each member discussing the conflict with some other people in their lives. Then they will see the two together dealing with the issue. The play unfolds over the course of the three-session intervention. In the first session, the play section ends in a cliffhanger. And then in the third session, the participants are allowed to interview the characters so they can understand what the motivations and challenges the characters are facing internally. And then they make suggestions for an ending that will resolve the issue, which the actors then act out. Other activities include games and role plays and a condom demo on anatomical models and discussions, which will allow the youth to sort of examine their own personal cues and triggers for sexual risk. So that's the PALMS intervention. And I'm going to move on to the overall evaluation. So thanks to a grant from the Innovative Intervention Project of the CDC, we were able to evaluate this project that we've been doing with young men. So we compared participants from sites where we provided services with a peer group that did not receive the intervention. So we worked with three sites to evaluate PALMS. Their intervention group was mostly youth who lived at JJC and the Bridge. JJC is a short-term residential facility for males aged 10 to 18 who are involved in the judicial system, and they're there because they're waiting for a final placement. The Bridge is a residential drug treatment center for male adolescents aged 14 to 18, some of whom are also there because of the judicial system involvement. The comparison group was called Northeast Treatment, which is also known as the NET, and like JJC, it's a short-term residential facility where youth are there because they're waiting to be finally placed by the judicial system. Okay. So we did do two intervention groups at the NET after we finished recruiting the control group. Although in a really rigorous clinical trial, participants would be randomly assigned to the intervention and comparison groups, this wasn't really possible because we had some pre-existing contractual arrangements, so we did it by site. So at each site, all residents had to receive the intervention. And today the outcomes I'll be talking about compare the changes between the information from the baseline interviews, which we received parental consent and child assent for, and 6-month follow-up interviews. Data collection took place in 2005 to 2006, and at baseline there were 335 participants between the two groups. The total retention at 6 months was 81%, which is 269 6-month participants. So here's a summary of the findings from the overall evaluation, where we compare the intervention group to the control group. So in HIV knowledge and attitudes, the intervention group showed bigger improvements in HIV knowledge, condom use knowledge, attitudes toward people living with HIV/AIDS, and attitudes towards HIV testing when compared to their control group peers. The intervention group also showed some decrease in sexual risks. So when we looked at the youth who lived at home at follow-up and therefore could be sexually active when they wanted to be, we saw that those who were 15 and older showed a significant decrease in the number of sexual partners when compared to the control youth of the same age and location. In addition, intervention youth of all ages increased their condom use with non-main partners significantly more than the comparison youth did. So now we're set to talk about the dose effects with the intervention group. So first let's look at the attendance at each site for the intervention participants. So 95% attended session 1, 88% attended session 2, 73% attended session 3, with 72% attending all of the sessions. So from now on I'll call those folks completers, and those who didn't receive the complete intervention, non-completers. One thing that's a little unusual about POMS is that the participants didn't have a choice about attending or leaving the intervention. If they were at the site when the intervention was occurring, they had to attend. When a participant did not attend an intervention session, it was due to circumstances beyond his control, typically court-related circumstances, like they were in court or they had a court-mandated change in residence since the previous day. So that means that we have an unusual opportunity to look at attrition and dose effects, secure that they're really due to the dose and not just artifacts due to interest level or something else individual-related. So our first steps to compare the completers and non-completers is to see if there are baseline differences that we should control for. So every time you see these yellow bars here, they represent the completers, and the blue bars represent the non-completers. So this chart showing the age at baseline of the two groups, there aren't significant differences between the groups. This chart shows the race and ethnicity. Note that Black or African American participants are about 80%, and although it looks like there might be some differences, there aren't any statistically significant differences between the two groups. This chart compares prevalence of ever participating in different types of sexual activity. So all the way on the left, you can see that about 90% of each group had some type of sex at baseline. Then in the next three sets of bars, it goes into the specific types of sex: ever oral sex, ever vaginal sex, and ever anal sex. So the non-completers were more likely to have oral sex ever than the completers. Excuse me, but there weren't any differences in ever having vaginal sex or ever having anal sex. Okay, There are also no significant differences in economies at last sex with either main or non-main partners at baseline. So to sum up all these comparing slides, looking at the baseline characteristics, there weren't really a lot of significant differences between the completers and non-completers other than the higher incidence of oral sex ever at baseline among the non-completers. So moving on to the dose-related outcomes, in knowledge and attitudes and sexual behavior. HIV knowledge and attitudes were measured using different inventories and scales, and if you're interested in this, I can talk about them at length later when we have less limited time. So next are going to be a series of outcomes showing the changes in means from baseline to 6 months. So on each of these slides, there'll be a white bar that shows the mean scores at baseline and then a pink bar showing the mean scores at follow-up. So this is showing us the change in HIV knowledge scores between the 2 points in time. The completer scores on the left rose 2 points from 10.62 at baseline to 12.63 at follow-up, which is like improving a test score from a C to an A-. The non-completers also rose significantly, but only about 1 point, which would be like going from a C to a B. The difference in increase between the groups is a significant difference, so there is a dose effect here. Looking at the 5-item correct condom use scores, you can see the completer scores on the left rose again from 3.55 to 4.49, which is like going from a C- to an A-. The non-completer scores did not change significantly, and the difference between this is another significant dose effect. However, there were not significant differences between completers and non-completers on the attitudes towards HIV-positive people scale or on the attitudes towards HIV testing scale. Okay, so now we'll look at the sexual behavior outcomes. Here we're looking at the mean numbers of sexual partners in the past 6 months at baseline and at follow-up, but we're only looking at the 75 youth who are living at home at follow-up. So we took this step to look only at the youth living at home to eliminate the effects of incarceration or another type of really restricted environment on sexual partner choice at follow-up. So on the left, the completers' mean number of partners fell from 4.2 to 2.3, which is almost a 50% decrease. In contrast, the mean number of partners for non-completers stayed about the same at the two time points. So this relationship between dose, residence, and number of partners is a significant relationship. For this slide, we're back to the blue and yellow bars, which means we're looking at the main partner for completers and non-completers and condom use with non-main partners for completers and non-completers. And although it looks like there might be some differences there, they aren't statistically significant here. So in conclusion, the PALMS intervention dose had effects on knowledge items. So we observed significantly higher increases in HIV knowledge and condom use knowledge for completers. However, differences were not observed in improvements in attitudes scales. Repeated sessions might help knowledge retention and understanding over the 6 month period. For the sexual behavior outcomes, dose effects were observed in reduction in mean number of sexual partners that participants chose to have. However, dose did not affect the condom use at last sex with main or non-main partners. So it seems to us that youth are choosing a strategy of picking less partners and that the dose had an effect on that. So another note on sexual behavior outcomes is that in general, documenting intervention effects on sexual behavior was really difficult for us with this population because high rates of condom use at baseline made it hard to detect increases, first of all. And then low rates of sexual behavior with the two different partner types at follow-up made it really difficult to look at changes there too. And that difficulty was mainly due to the fact that they were transferred from one judicial facility to another and they had never lived at home in a setting where they were free to behave in the way that they would choose to. So, but in sum, dose effects were observed. And these dose effects lend evidence that PALMS is an effective intervention for increasing HIV and condom knowledge and decreasing the number of sexual partners. So one final note is that the findings and conclusions are those of the authors and do not necessarily represent the views of the CDC. And this is my contact information. If you have questions, you want to know all the exciting information about what's on the scales, that kind of stuff. Thanks.